This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by people like Jeffrey Davis, who is the newest member of the Friends of the Magic Word. It's because of sponsors such as him whose financial support help keep this production going week after week. We welcome Jeffrey this week and also thank all the rest of the Friends of the Magic Word who help us with their financial support. And if you would like to learn more about that and how you can help support us, and if you have the financial means to do so, then please visit patreon.com/themagicword. Or you can click on the website through themagicwordpodcast.com on the link there, and you can learn more information about how that you can help support us as well. So we thank all of you guys, and we thank each and every one of you listeners also for coming back each week and listening to the podcast. Well, this week we're going to be talking with Rick Wilcox and his wife Susan in the Wisconsin Dells. Now, I've had this in the can, so to speak, for a while. In fact, I had recorded this in early April of this year, 2017, prior to the 4F convention, which I was unable to attend this year. But nevertheless, I wanted to try to get this out earlier before the summer season and his high tourist season because, you see, Rick has an illusion show, actually has a theater called the Rick Wilcox Magic Theater there in the Wisconsin Dells, and it is a popular site. And in fact, is listed as the best family travel destination in Wisconsin, as determined by Reader's Digest. So I think that's great news, and congratulations to Rick and Susan for that. Well, they have a very busy time during the high season, which is the tour season going on right now. And if you have an opportunity and are anywhere nearby the Wisconsin Dells, which is a popular tourist destination, be sure to go over there to visit. And in this podcast today, they talk about the life and times, basically, of being an illusionist who has their own theater and how they got the theater and the problems they had in trying to get it remodeled and reconverted, and also building the show, putting the things in, scripting, rehearsing, putting in new illusions all the time, because it is, I said, a tourist destination with some of the same tourists returning season after season. And they're now into their 19th successful season and doing better all the time. So again, if you have an opportunity, be sure to go up and check them out. And if you want to get tickets or know more about that, you need to visit rickwilcox.com. That's rickwilcox.com. So we have an interesting conversation over here, and if you are interested in illusions, or even if not, I think that you'll enjoy this as well, because Rick and I have been friends for a long time. We got to know each other at Fector's Finger Flicking Frolic, where we attend each year, and he's been involved with the audio and visual part of the convention, although I've seen him do close-up as well, and he is quite adept at doing close-up. So even though he's an illusionist, he kind of started, I guess, as a close-up magician in restaurants. He talks about that here on the podcast, too. So I think this is something that, regardless of whatever your interest is in magic, whether it's close-up, stage, whether it's mentalism, escapes, whatever it is, you'll get something out of this. It was a good conversation. I do want to apologize up front a little bit for the quality of the recording. We had done a Skype call on this, and unfortunately, I don't know whether that it was a poor Wi-Fi signal on his side or on my side, if it was rain coming down here, or if they had a weak signal there. Occasionally, there were some dropouts. I edited this as best I could in order to try to make this as listenable, if that's a word, as possible. Certainly the content is golden, and I think it's important that we get as much of this in there, even though I could have edited a little bit more. But some of the things they were saying were very important, I thought, too. So anyhow, I want to apologize. It's not pervasive. It's not happening throughout the entire podcast, but just at a few places. And if you do have a little bit of issue with it, just hang on, because a few seconds later, it seems to correct itself. So it's not going on for any long chunks of time, so just intermittently. So again, I apologize for that, and hopefully all that has been corrected. Again, that was several months ago when we recorded it, and it's taken a while, and so now we're finally here, and I want to introduce this week Rick Wilcox and Susan here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and I have with me today, all the way from the Wisconsin Dells, Rick Wilcox and Susan. Hi there, guys.
Hi, Guy.
Hi.
Good to have you here this morning, and I know it's, I say it's morning, and I it's kind of like, you know, when someone's going to go and talk with a they were interested in working in a restaurant. You don't go to talk to someone, a manager at the restaurant during the busy times during lunch or dinner or whatever, but you want to talk with them when it's going to be during a slow time. And this is the same thing with you. Obviously, that you guys have got a lot of things going on in the evenings and the afternoons where you're working with planning for your shows and actually doing the shows and everything in the evenings. And so that's why mornings are kind of, if anything, a little bit more of a slow time, I assume, for you.
Well, typically, I'm over at the theater right now setting up for the show, but tonight we don't have a show. So we had one last night. We've got one tomorrow and Thursday and Saturday. So typically, I'm actually over there right now setting up.
And oh, I see.
Till about 2 o'clock. Then I come home, take a rest, and go back over there a little after 5. And then we're there till like 10 or 11.
It's interesting that you're dark on Tuesdays. I would think, you know, a lot of times places are dark on maybe Sunday or Monday, but you're dark on Tuesdays.
Well, just for spring break.
Oh, I see. Of course,
not in the summertime.
Right. Right. Well, walk me through a typical day then, as far as what you would be doing, getting up in the morning and going to the theater, and what are you doing, and then with your tickets and all that.
Well, I'd get over there in the morning and start setting the show. I've got a big list that I go through to set all the illusions. And as you know, it's not really magic. You have to make it look like it's magic. So there's just, there's certain things that we prepare the night before after the show and certain things that we prepare the day of the show. You know, charging the batteries, cleaning the guillotine blades the night of the show. You have to do that type of thing.
You got to wipe off all the blood and everything for the night before.
Yeah, no carrot juice because of all the acid, you know.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Wrecks the blades if you don't do it. Setting the paper for Eclipse and setting all the – boy, there's just – you know, there's – I'd have to have my list in front of me to go through.
Do you find that, though, it's still a lot easier to have all that stuff set so you go to the theater and prepare everything like you are, as opposed to just reloading it and putting it back in a van or a big semi and heading out to the next show the next night and resetting all that again?
We really prefer just leaving it right at the theater. Although this week we have a show at a nearby casino that's hiring us for an event. So we do have to pack everything up and bring it over there, which is a lot of work. You know, it takes days to get that all figured out and packed up, and then you got to bring it back home and unpack it. And yeah, we prefer to just leave it all here. That's the nice thing about having your own theater.
Yeah, I would think whenever that you do have the theater, of course, that you would have probably fewer assistants because you don't have all the people to help you load and pack everything or get stuff ready for the show or whatever. I mean, like if you're going to be going to the casino, I assume that you've got a lot of helpers.
Yep, we do. But yes, it's nice to be able to just do it right at the theater and leave everything set up. Although, you know, things break every day. There's something that you have to fix. It's just like when you're traveling and you're bringing your things on the road, you never know what's going to happen.
When you have something break like that, do you often find, well, hey, we could not only repair that, but here's another way to avoid that from happening in the future and actually make an improvement on these illusions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're always doing that. Every day it seems like we make a little – I tape the shows, so I always try to watch them afterwards, and I go, you know what? It would be better if I did this. Just last night, 11 o'clock at night, I was fixing something to make it look better. So we're constantly doing that.
Well, and when you're going to be going and doing a show like you said over the casino or something, there are some illusions obviously that travel a little bit better than others. But, I mean, try, for an example, to bring the Eclipse. That would be a huge illusion to try to pack and bring over. I assume that's not necessarily one that you're going to be using.
Typically, we would bring that.
Really?
But we certainly wouldn't bring the helicopter or the Lamborghini appearance or the slicer illusion because those are huge, heavy props, and they could get damaged, you know, on the way over there. So those are the ones we wouldn't bring.
You know, I'm always curious to know when I talk not only with close-up guys, but particularly stage guys, as far as your trick selection. You know, how is it that you come about with what you're going to be selecting to for routine and then try and put that routine together? I mean, I know there are things you have to do in front of the curtain while things are being switched out, you know, backstage and everything. You open the curtain and then you go to the next, and I understand the transition of that. But I'm just saying, as far as trying to have something that is not, you know, the same cut and slice, and then you close the curtain, then you do a torn or short newspaper, and you open up and you have another cut and slice, and then you close the curtain, and then you have a fresh fish where you torn or another little piece of paper or something, and then open up and have another cut and slice. And in other words, there are certain things, it's like with mentalists, a lot of times that it's just one prediction after another. It's kind of hard to try to prove your powers or to identify. I'm getting off on a tangent here, but I think you kind of get my point as far as your trick selection and the effects. So this way you're not having the same effect, but you're having something a little bit different.
Yeah, we're really mindful of the ebb and flow of the show and how the audience sees things, which is quite a bit different than maybe how audience of magicians would see things and how they think things are similar. You know, you talk about cut and slice, but we even have to be mindful of how an illusion looks. And it might not be a cut and slice. It might be, you know, appearance and reappearance. But if it looks too similar to the audience, they think they've already seen that trick.
Right.
And so we're pretty careful, about the run of the show, about how they actually visually look, and then also the pace of the illusion. If we do 1 minute in front of the curtain and then 4 minutes behind and then 1 minute in front and 4 minutes behind, that also gets monotonous.
True.
So we're constantly talking about that, and we do switch things around once we get them polished.
And so do you move things in and out of the warehouse, I guess, as far as trying to rotate the routines so that people who are return tourists to the Dells each year say, hey, I want to see the show again. I mean, there are some favorites, but new stuff that you always offer, or do you have this same show or what?
No, we're constantly changing it. We could change the show within a year. We could change it 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
Or more. When people do come back, they always see something new.
And that's for our customers, but it's really, first of all, for Rick and to keep him fresh.
Yeah. Honestly, most of the customers that come and see the show, even though we've been here for, this will be our 19th season, it's amazing how many people are seeing it for the very first time. So there are people that come every year, and they're happy to know, and they always tell us, it's always so nice to see something new. But for the most part, we could just do the same show over and over and over again, but that would be so boring for me.
I think that it would be, certainly. I mean, there are certain things, I believe, that are fan favorites, if you will, that they kind of want to see, and sometimes you may not even know necessarily what those things are until later, saying, oh, I thought he was going to do some such and such because I brought my kids here to see something he did last year, and I wish he would have done that.
Right, that happens, but then they see something in place of it, and they go, oh, but that was really good.
Exactly.
So, you know, and it depends on the kind of help that we have backstage, too. Every year it changes, and some people come and go, and, you know, sometimes we can't, like right now, we don't have the helicopter in. So we have the motorcycle in instead.
Okay.
And so we you can only have so many appearances. We've got the car, and we've got the motorcycle, and, you know, it changes depending on the kind of help that we have.
Right, right. Now, what about the season? As you're mentioning right now, this is during the spring break, and you're open because you know there are going to be some tourists in. But because of the inclement weather in Wisconsin up there, obviously there are certain months out of the year in which it's difficult to get in and out, and certainly wouldn't be the high tourist season. So what is your usual open? What are your dates?
Our main season is Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's really when we're in high gear. And then the rest of the year, we do some Saturdays. We do a Thanksgiving performance, a couple of Christmas holiday performances, and then some sporadic spring breaks. We just keep track of kind of when people are here in town, and we look at the family travel schedule, basically, through the schools.
Right. So for spring break, the schools are off for like a month, month and a half.
It's spread out.
So we're doing shows, three shows a week. You know, we get them on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays, and that's typically a good period of shows.
Right.
Because a lot of times they're only in town for 3 days, so they can pick the day that we're open over that 3 day period.
Now, during spring break, is the Wisconsin Dells more of a place that's a spring break destination for college kids, or is it more for families?
It's for families.
Okay.
They have indoor water parks here, big resorts with indoor water parks. So they come up and they swim, and then they go to our show or whatever else there is to do.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to ask about as well. You know, it's been many, many years since I've last been to the Dells, but I've been to Branson a time or two, and I know what that's like. And is the Dells kind of like a miniature Branson in a way?
I think there's less theaters here. Mm-hmm. Branson is a lot more shows.
It's a lot smaller, and it's typically a family destination, I guess. I don't know what it would be like. Maybe a Pigeon Forge. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what it's like either. Because there's more like zip lining, indoor, outdoor water parks, go-karts.
Ducks, boats.
Duck rides, candy shops.
It's a nice place to be for a couple nights.
Right, right. But there are a lot of motels and everything. It's not outdoor camping or RV parks?
No. It's lots of hotels.
Yeah.
More hotels than I can imagine.
Right. Also, one of the things I was going to ask you about, too, Rick, is I recall a few years ago that you guys had some issues with the city, it seems like, I want to talk about what got resolved and, you know, what kind of led up to all that as far as some of the difficulties you had in trying to get some permits.
Yeah, we're still working with them on a few things, so we're glad to have the bulk of that behind us.
It wasn't getting permits. It was more like the lake drained. And when the lake drained, there was a lot of things that came up with the DNR. And one of the issues was that we live right on the lake. And we discovered that our land is actually on the dam. And that was the biggest problem. The DNR came after us. The village wanted to do certain things to our land.
Now, what's the DNR stand for?
The Department of Natural Resources.
Okay.
And it was a 7-year battle that we had to work it out with. And
to make sure that we could keep our home. So that was the basic premise, was that we wanted to keep the title to our home.
Right, because basically they were saying that, as the water receded, that found that your property line encroached on federal lands, I guess?
State.
State lands, okay. And so the state was saying state domain, and this is ours, not yours. You guys got to move.
Pretty much. Wow. Kind of like that, yeah. But it was a 7-year battle, but we got through it, and it's pretty much over now.
And you're pretty much, you get to stay where you are.
We got our home back, we got our land, but it was a 7-year distraction from what we really love to do.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be weighing pretty heavy on your mind, certainly, and distracting you away from trying to put together your show and keeping that focus, I guess, you know, each evening, kind of like, what do I got? I got to go to court tomorrow or something.
Exactly.
Or file some papers. As far as theaters, you said you've been there for like 19 years. What is the best way that you found like to promote your shows?
Well, that changes over the years. You know, I can't remember how many years ago it was. When the flat screen TVs just came out, everyone else was putting up posters all over in the different hotels. Well, we put up flat screen TVs, and because we thought video would be better than a static image. And then once we started doing that, everyone started doing flat screen TVs. Before that, we did key cards. So we would make a little key card, you know, those little magnetic or plastic key cards. So every time someone would go into a check into the room, they would see our face on that.
Right.
Billboards. We did newspapers. We did TV. So it changes over the years.
But the number one way really is word of mouth for us.
Mm-hmm.
And people talking about it, having seen the show. We talked to everybody after the show and asked them to tell their friends, and that's been really successful for us.
TripAdvisor.
Yeah, I think word of mouth is the best advertising for anything, you know, testimonials and somebody talking about a product or service or whatever it is, because people like to do business with friends and people that they can trust, who they've heard these kinds of good reports that someone has had good dealings with so-and-so, and I recommend that you go get your roof repaired from this guy or whatever that it is. So, yeah, that's definitely the way to go. But I think that's smart, that you certainly have to have a kind of an ongoing advertising plan, that it can't always be the same thing, and particularly with the way technology moves so quickly and social media and everything, that you have to go with that. And certainly, as you say, TripAdvisor and Yelp, I'm sure, are those kinds of things that, again, that people turn to. I know we do. My wife and I will take a look at some ratings before we might choose a restaurant. We'll say, well, let's see, what have they got? You know, what kind of rating do they have? Or even if you're going to buy something from a website, you know, what are the testimonials? Or when she's buying a book, she'll say, you know, what have the other readers thought about this author or something? So, yeah, I think that you have to go with the flow and whatever the times are, and that the social media seems to be the main thing now.
Yeah, absolutely. You just got to keep up with the times and figure out what it is at the time right now. What is the best way to sell tickets?
Right.
I mean, it used to be the little magazine that they put out. As soon as that magazine was sent out to all the people, we'd get the phone would be ringing and ringing and ringing. And now it doesn't seem to really even matter that much. It's more all internet.
And when people order their tickets right now, like I assume online, or do they make phone calls, or they happen to be in town and they see a promotional or an advertisement and get in touch with you, how do you make your sales, ticket sales?
It's mostly online ticketing orders. Our box office opens up at 3:00, and that has gotten later and later over the years because of the internet ticketing ordering. And I do the facilitating of a lot of the emails and things during the day. And then at 3:00, we have our box office manager comes in, and she's there to kind of set things up in the lobby in the front of the house and answer phone calls and handle the walk-ins.
And it used to be 9:30 we'd open.
Wow.
That was a long time ago.
And start taking calls. And, you know, now it just seems like if people want to go, they just hop on their phone and order tickets. It's really easy.
Well, yeah. More of the, on their phone, mobile device or whatever, that they can, order in advance and get their tickets and just pick them up in there at the will call. I'm sure that's what everybody else is using then as well. So,
well, you never know either. I mean, sometimes people decide at the last minute they're going to come. And, you know, we just don't know. Every day's different. Some days we're like, oh, we don't have a very big show. And then at showtime, it's like, what happened? It's like they all came at the last minute.
So now, how large of a theater is it? How many seats have you got?
We have about 520 seats.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in deciding that it was going to be in Wisconsin Dells, were you from Wisconsin originally? You thought this is great, or you were there on vacation one time? You thought this is a good place to settle, and we don't have to travel? Or what was your thinking when you found your location?
Well, you know, we did a lot of corporate shows before this, and Susan said, hey, why don't we go somewhere where they can see us? And I was like, that would be great, but good luck, you know, trying to find somebody to hire you. She goes, no, let's buy a place. And I was like, I wasn't even thinking about that. But she was a realtor, and we were reading a book called Diamonds in Your Own Backyard. And so we started
looking around the area. I grew up about an hour and a half from here, and Rick grew up about 2 hours from the Dells. So we were both familiar with it.
Yes.
And his dad at the time kept saying, why don't you look in the Dells? Because we were traveling to Vegas and Atlantic City and, you know, Branson, and trying to figure out where we might want to kind of settle. And we kept saying, no, why would we want to be in the Dells? Well, Rick ended up heading to Chicago for a show about 2.5 years after we were married. He was doing a close-up show down there. And I just got on the phone to some realtors in the Wisconsin Dells and said, can you just fax me anything that's for sale, like a warehouse, a lot, you know, any type of commercial building that you have for sale right now? And about 10 minutes later, through the fax machine, came this theater for sale. And I about died.
Wow.
So I reached Rick in Chicago and said, we have an appointment tomorrow. And I don't think either of us slept that night. We were so excited.
Yeah.
And we drove up to the Dells and spent about 6 hours in the theater, and it was a mess. And it was being foreclosed on, and we stayed in town, and then we went back to see the theater the next day, and we just both knew that this is what we wanted to do.
We saw that it had a lot of potential, but it was a mess. I mean, there were 1,000 extension cords plugged in for all the lights. I mean, there were fire code problems, no sprinkler system. The seats were like 3 different kinds of seats, and the stuffing was coming out of them.
There was only one restroom in the lobby, and that was the men's room. The women's room, you had to walk through the theater to basically go backstage to use the restroom. It was set up wrong. It smelled like it was just terrible.
Yeah, it was bad, but we knew that we could fix it up because we were used to a lot of hard work. So, we developed a real nice
business plan,
marketing plan that we could present to the banks so they knew what we were doing. And I had plenty of experience, but.
And we had plenty of capital because we each had some rental properties that we could sell to, we had equity to put into the theater, but nobody would give us a loan.
Right. So we were like, oh man, we went back to the guy who was selling it and said, listen, we just can't, we really want to do this, but we just don't have the financing. It's just too much.
And we showed him our video.
Right. And because we had recently just rented a theater and did our whole show and recorded it and put together a really nice video just in case somebody would hire us. And so we showed him that and he started crying. And he said, you know what? This is exactly what the Dells needs.
Right. So against the judgment of his attorney, of his realtor, probably of his family, he decided to give us a loan.
So, and that was a banker or was that an individual?
Just an individual. He was the one who had the building.
He took the building back from.
Because the last guy wasn't paying him.
Yeah.
So he took a chance on us. We got some more money from friends, and we made it work.
We borrowed some more money
We borrowed more money from friends.
So we're happy to say the friends have all been paid back, and the guy passed away, but we were able to pay him back and refinance through a bank after a few years. So it worked out for him, and he gave us a great gift by giving us a loan, taking a chance.
Yeah, the realtor wanted to just plow the building down and put something else up there. So we're really glad that didn't happen.
Well, it sounds like you did a lot of remodeling then. If the restrooms and everything else weren't in the right places and the new seats, et cetera, that there must have been a lot of money and time and effort put into remodeling all that.
Every year we do something, some major renovation.
Yeah, it's completely changed. Susan's right. Every year, I mean, whether it's the roof or the parking lot,
furnaces,
or the sign at the end of the road, the seats. I mean, when we found out how much this theater seats would be, I think it was like $100,000. And we were like, what?
Wow.
How are we going to get $100,000 to replace those seats?
So, because the seats that were there when we bought the building were from 3 or 4 different theaters, and they had stuffing poking out of them. They were filthy. It was a disaster. But the first summer, we had to use them. And so we duct taped them together, and we cleaned them up, and we just made the best out of it. And when we bought the theater, there were 610 seats. So after the first season, Rick went to work finding some other seats.
I actually called Marcus Corporation, who owns a lot of movie theaters, and I asked if they ever had any older seats that they've replaced with new ones that they'd be willing to give me.
Right.
And in exchange, I would do a big corporate show for them. And they agreed. And we ended up getting like 1,000 seats that were in really good shape. And we just did a big corporate show for them. And then we had to figure out how to get rid of all the old ones. And, renting a dumpster was like, I was going to have to pay almost $1,000 just for dumpsters to get rid of these. So I ended up selling them to somebody for a buck a piece, and they took them out. So that was good.
Wow.
You just got to be creative how to make all this work. But
yeah, it was great. It was fun. And those seats still look great.
They do.
And we put in about 520 of them. So, yeah, they look great.
That's a good idea. You know, some years ago when I had first moved into my house here in Houston, there was a nearby shopping center that had a movie theater. And within about 6 months that I was here, they closed that and remodeled and put in a TJ Maxx or Ross or some sort of another department store type place. But they threw out all the seats and they put them in these big dumpsters. And they were really still good seats. And so when you say, you know, contacting someone like that, that's actually a good idea to go and do some sort of a trade out like that. That was an excellent idea as far as being creative on how to pay for that. But sometimes these things are just thrown out. And I thought, well, I'm going to get a couple of these and bring them into the house. Well, there was a huge rainstorm we had that for like the next week. And when I finally was able to get to there to pull one out of the dumpster, that it was just soaked and it was no good whatsoever. And then a few years later, my brother was a graduate of the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and I was up visiting with him, and they were remodeling one of the Coliseum or someplace in there. Anyhow, they were throwing out a lot of seats. Same way there, but it's like, how am I going to get these seats back to Texas? Plus, what am I going to do with them at this point? But it's amazing. Every once in a while, you'll see these theater seats that are just in dumpsters. But if you contact somebody, if you need them, I think that they'd be kind of cool just if somebody has room in their house to have a couple of seats, two or three or a row of them or something, just like in your magic room, you know, where you can sit and read, or people are coming over to visit that you can have. And I know other people put them in their homes, like Mark D'Souza's got a nice little theater, and he's got nice theater seats, you know, in his home. So it's not just necessarily for a big theater production like what you got. I think that there are some other opportunities and places you can find some theater seats to put in your own home, you know, for things like that.
Yeah, that's always a dream, I guess, for every magician to have his own theater, even if it's only 10 seats.
Right.
Right?
No, that's exactly right. I had built a small one when I lived in Omaha there was a bay window upstairs, and we had basements in Omaha, and downstairs that below this bay window was kind of a rounded area, which was perfect. Put like a little close-up room table there, and I had curtains in front of this thing, and then I had chairs set up. So I had a little 10, 12-seat theater, and a lot of times the clubs would, local club would come over and meet, or I'd do shows for the neighbors and whatever. So, yeah, it was kind of my own miniature theater in my own home. So, yeah, it is kind of a little dream. Was that something that you guys had dreamed of, or particularly Rick, I guess, when you were young, that wanting to be an illusionist, although you do close-up too? I mean, when you and I have gotten to know each other, of course, with Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic, we go to the 4F every year, and that I always think of you as being an illusionist as opposed to a close-up guy, but you were really a good close-up magician as well.
No, I love close-up. In fact, that's what I started off with. You know, when I was 15 years old, I started doing close-up at restaurants. And that's what I did, mm-hmm. you know, up until like I was 27. Then I started switching to illusions, because that's when I started doing magic full time. And I had to be prepared to entertain in any situation, whether it was a trade show, whether it was a big show for 600 people. So I needed to start doing more big illusions. And then when we bought the theater and we were entertaining 600 people at a time, I couldn't just do close-up magic. Although I always have a segment in the show where we do close-up. We've got the cameras and the screens and things like that. And I love doing that kind of magic.
Yeah, in fact, someone just last night said to Rick that she liked all the big illusions, but she said her favorite part was the close-up segments that he did. And so that always is great when people appreciate that, because I think that takes the most skill and practice. And it's the most intimate, but it's hard to, you know, do a whole show of that on a screen for that many people. But it certainly is my favorite type of magic to watch Rick do.
Yeah, I think people have an appreciation for that, because they know it's, you know, it's all a sleight of hand. And it's like, it's just my hands and coins, or my hands and cards.
Exactly.
And it's like, how can you do that? It looks like real magic. And so, yeah, a lot of people, they do really like that those segments that we do. In fact, we did not too long ago, we did a whole show, which was all close-up magic. And I had, you know, people come up on stage, and we had enough room for about 40 chairs to do close-up shows. But we struggled with convincing people ahead of time that they were going to like this show as much as the big show, apparently, sure, with the big illusions. So they would be like, we would say, no, this is a close-up show. It's all sleight of hand. You know, it's up close with Rick. And then, you know, they'd say, oh, no, we want the big show. And it's like, no, you don't. You know, and, but once they see it, they go, oh, wow, this was great. But it's been a struggle. You got to kind of pick one or the other, I think, even though I want to do the close-up again.
Yeah, it's a marketing struggle.
Well, that's true. But have you thought about doing some close-up in the lobby beforehand in order to kind of warm up the audience?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
No. Yeah, no, that doesn't work. In fact, a lot of the hotels would say, hey, could you come over here and entertain in our lobby and give people a preview of what you do? And it's like,
And okay. We've tried that.
We did try it, and it didn't work. Because it doesn't work.
It doesn't translate. People are like, oh, yeah, I saw that. He did some card tricks.
And he goes, well, how are you going to do? And he goes, how many seats do you have? Well, we have 500 seats. It's like, well, how are you going to do card tricks for 500 people? They don't get it. And it's like, well, I just saw you do your show there, so why would I want to come over and see you or at the theater? It's like, no, you didn't see it. This is just a preview. It's like, well, I thought you said you didn't do card tricks. It's like, well, oh, boy.
Yeah. So
difficult.
Marketing magic is really difficult because of people's preconceived notions about props, about cards, and about birthday parties or clowns. You know, the whole marketing issues get really jumbled in people's heads to be able to explain to them, this isn't a birthday party magician. You know, we do big things. It's polished. It's professional. It's sophisticated. It's not too sexy for the family. So
it's not scary. It's, you know,
it's like defensive marketing, but we don't want to do that either. So it's really been our biggest challenge to let people know what we do, because once they come, they usually say, oh my gosh, we should have come here a decade ago. We've been coming to the Dells for 20 years. Where, you know, why haven't we been here sooner? We're going to come next year. We're going to bring our friends. So it's just they have this preconceived notion.
Yeah, no question about that. I believe there are certainly, just as there are different genres of music, of whether it's going to be, you know, classic or rock or swing or whatever, R&B, there are different types of magic. Now, everybody hears music all day long in your commercials and radio and every place else, but you don't see magic frequently. In fact, I would imagine that you hear time and time again, people say, this is the first magic show I've ever seen live. You know,
yes.
I've seen some things on TV, and they just love it. But whenever that I have performed someplace, let's say doing strolling magic, and then another company will see me and say, hey, we want to book you for doing the same thing over here. Well, I also have a stage show. You have a stage show? Or vice versa. If they see me doing a larger after dinner show, then I later, you know, somebody will book me for that, but I'll say, well, I also do strolling. Well, what's strolling magic? You know, because they haven't seen that or don't know these other types of magic that even exist, or even other kinds of things, whether it's mentalism or escapes or whatever other kinds of things that people, I think, just see you in a narrow box because they haven't had that base of comparison where they have seen other kinds of magic, unlike music, that they have heard other kinds. So you're exactly right then, Susan. I think that whenever I guess you're doing some close-up magic and they're going to say, you know, how can you do that in a stage for 500 people? They just are not thinking outside that box.
Yeah, it's really tricky. It's always been tricky. People don't understand. They don't understand the terms. I had a person call me one time and say, we want to hire you for a trade show to do your illusions. And I said, okay. And I was thinking, normally you do close-up magic at trade shows. Well, I was a lot younger at this point. So I sent him a tape on all my big illusions. They didn't hire me. And I found out, it's like, well, no, we didn't want the big props. And I said, you said you wanted illusions. It's like, no, we wanted coin tricks and things like that. It's like, oh, so you have to educate people. They don't understand.
Well, there's also a definition in which that some people may call magic illusions or vice versa, and that we're thinking one thing within our industry, and the general public might think of that completely different.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and we found that people want to laugh. So we really have to market the magic and the comedy. So once we started saying magic and comedy, it was a lot. People were like, okay, it's a magic show, but it sounds like it's funny too. So let's go. You know, they, so we should probably, do comedy and magic.
Well, I noticed that's what Nathan Burton does. I just was in Vegas recently and had done a podcast with him, and he builds his show as being a comedy magician, and that's the comedy magic of Nathan Burton. And so it's like the first and foremost, because I think a lot of, and I believe he does bring in a lot of families. It's an early evening show, and there were a lot of kids who were in that, and so it is a family-friendly type of show, just as yours is. And so it's, that's really a good idea of trying to market it by using that comedy, because people understand what comedy is. There are various types of magic that they may have seen on TV, and they might think, just as you said earlier, Susan, that some might perceive it as being scary even, and so, or dangerous or whatever, and maybe not suitable for children. But if they say comedy, oh, that sounds like that'd be fun, or, you know, family magic show or something, you know, like that, that would encourage the type of tourism that you have there already in the Dells to come and see the show.
Right. It's, you know, it's tricky, but we always want to make sure that the show is exciting, professional, cool, but not too scary, although we do have some scary things in it for the kids, and not too sexual. And it's, you know, you just got to be careful.
What about scripting? Do you spend a lot of time in scripting each of your routines?
Oh, my gosh, you wouldn't believe it. A lot. Constantly changing the script. And it's, you know, it's really got to be fast paced. People aren't patient. You know, you don't want to give people a chance to pull out their phone and start looking at their phones. So they don't. But it's really important. Scripts are really important.
Yeah. Over the years, our scripts have changed. People's attention span has gotten shorter and shorter.
Right.
So we're pretty mindful of that, too.
Well, speaking of the phones and everything, that's something I know David Copperfield and others have actually started to embrace, and that is that, hey, I know you're going to be taking some photos and whatever, and I think Murray Sawchuk does this in Vegas as well, in which he says, go ahead and feel free to video and, you know, whatever you want to do, and send out Instagrams and whatever for the first 15 minutes of the show, so kind of get it out of your system, basically, and let everybody know that you're here and tell us about the show, and be sure and tag me at whatever it's your handle is going to be, your hashtag, and then that way that it helps promote your show. Plus, that it gives them the license to go ahead and do what they're going to probably surreptitiously do anyhow, and so this way they can be more blatant about it, and then put that away, so this way they can focus and watch the rest and enjoy the rest of the show. And it's good promotion and advertising then for you, because that way you have already you have all of these people who are posting on their to their social media with the hashtags of what you know will direct people back to you.
Yeah, I think those are great ideas. We need to spread out our seats a little bit more if we're going to have everybody using their phones because of the glow. So we discourage videoing and things. It's just it's too close of a proximity, and I think it's a distraction for the kids.
I see.
And so hopefully we can do that in the future.
Yeah.
But right now we need to move some seats.
Yeah, that makes sense. I understand what you're saying. Going back to close-up, I was mentioning in the lobby a little bit earlier, and I can understand why another reason that you wouldn't want to do that is because that you, Rick, would have, and Susan, too, would have your mind's actually somewhere else, and you're focused on making sure everything's set backstage before the curtains open and everything, so you don't have time to do any strolling out front. But I was thinking, like, of Le Grand David show, in which that Cesario would have different people out in front that were doing, they had a clown and, you know, a guy playing the trumpet and different kinds of things that were jugglers and whatnot that were happening in the lobby, just kind of creating this festival, this fun. So as people came in, they knew, hey, this is a fun place to be, and then seeing the Grand Magic show next. And I know some guys will hire other magicians to come and do some strolling magic for maybe a half hour while people are milling around the lobby, you know, before they go in, just to kind of give people not necessarily a snapshot of what's happening inside, but just some fun. Like I'm thinking of Warren and Annabelle's over in Hawaii, where I think that they've got a little bit of some close-up first, and then you kind of go in this ante room, and then you go into the main room where you see the rest of the show. So anyhow, kind of gone on a tangent over there, but has that been something that you have thought about or considered?
Well, we only have like 45 minutes before the show, maybe a half hour when people get there.
Yeah.
And by the time they get their popcorn, concessions, and go into the magic shop and see a few tricks demonstrated in the magic shop, and then they go into the theater and there's things to see while they're sitting there. There's you know, we have a projected thing image on the curtain that we have. We sell magic hands, which is like a wax mold of the hands, and we sell other things in the theater. That happens all pretty fast. So,
you don't need anything really to kill the time.
Yeah, we haven't needed anything out front at this point. So
we did try the Extel birds, you know, two birds, and they did a little comedy show before the show as some entertainment, talking to each other and doing some funny jokes and things like that. But
even that, we found it would have been better if it had been live. But I agree with you. I think Rick needs to be focusing on everything being set. And so we just haven't found the need for any type of pre-show.
Well, whenever that you have had the show over the years, over the 19 years, you were talking earlier than Rick at the beginning of our chat about how that you each day have to go in and repair something or get something prepared for each evening show and whatever. Have there been some things that have, I'm sure, that have gone wrong or broken? It's like, okay, well, let's move on to the next thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the time, you know, something happens.
Anything stand out that you can think of, a little story?
Yeah, we had some consultants that were magic consultants, and when we weren't watching, they were looking at some of the props and they were playing with the props, and we used it in the show that night. Well, they closed the trap, so when I opened up the door for Susan to get in, she couldn't get in.
Oh man,
you know, stuff like that happens. What else, Susan?
Well, you know, kids, birds, they don't always cooperate or do what you think they're going to do, and honestly, some of those are the funniest, best things. And then we try and figure out how to keep that stuff in the show when it happens. I'm trying to think of an example. But we've had everything go wrong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happens. I mean, and sometimes a trick just doesn't work for one reason or another, or wasn't quite set right. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody, it happens to everybody. I mean, I remember doing once the newspaper tear, and I didn't set it right. I was distracted by another magician that was there while I was setting it, and I didn't set it right. So it happens.
You just laugh and go on. I mean, we found that getting upset or talking to the technical, hey, something's wrong with the sound, something's wrong with the lights, when you bring that to the attention of the audience, instead of just laughing and saying, hey, it's a live show, folks, and going on to the next thing, if you bring it to their attention with either your discomfort, they're going to feel uncomfortable, and that's what they're going to remember.
You always have to have something in the wings ready to go to bring it on in case something like that happens. Last summer, we put in a new motor that opens and closes the one of the curtains automatically.
Yeah.
And the mechanism on the motor broke, and so we couldn't open it.
And that was our mid-stage curtain. So while Rick was out front and I was basically rewriting the show backstage and bringing him the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
Because we couldn't do our big illusion, which was right behind the curtain.
Yeah.
So we had to do everything in front of the curtain for the rest of the show. And so I had to get back there, reprogram the music in between tricks. And Susan had to basically grab some other things and say, we're going to do this, 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 and this.
And right, and go into the warehouse and bring out new and different illusions that we haven't done for years. And we just winged it, and it was something. But the audience really didn't know the difference. They just thought something was wrong with the music. So,
because really, we have stuff all over back there. You know, I have the Cuba Libra. I have my floating table. I've got the Rubik's Cube trick or the Metamorphosis and a mini cubes egg. And, you know, they're all over. We don't necessarily use them in every show, but they're back. You know, they're right there. So Susan just had to bring them out, and I had to just program the music, which is, I'm getting pretty quick at that. So
and then I just programmed the lights ahead, you know, a couple tricks ahead. It was exciting.
I recall Vic and Mary Kirk used to work here at the Magic Island from time to time, and they were a wonderful act. And Vic Kirk was one of those guys like Johnny Thompson that knew everything. But every once in a while, she would kind of fool him, in which that she would bring out a different prop that he was than what he was expecting, saying, "You know, we haven't done this in a long time. Let's give this a try." It's kind of what she was her internal script was saying as she would bring it out and hand it to him. He kind of look at her and say, "All right, we'll do this," you know. So, and it kind of kept things fresh because they were supposed to have this standard act, but they might throw in two or three new things each night, you know, that really wasn't part of their regular act. It was, it kind of kept him on his toes.
Right.
But anyhow, yeah, with all of the different things that happens, then certainly I was going to ask as far as taping this, that a lot of times it's the advice is that you should record every act so you go back and watch to see what lines you may have missed that the audience may have said that you want to recapture and use again, or something that happened that looks different from the stage or rather from the audience than it does from your perspective on the stage. Do you record your acts? I'm sure you did before, but do you still? And if so, do you watch them?
Absolutely. In fact, I was just watching one last night. I just put in a new trick this for spring break, and I was watching it last night, and I was like, oh my gosh, that I need to do that differently. And so I'd go back and I fixed it up, and it's like, it's exciting for me because we just improved the trick even better. So every time you do it, it gets better and better and better. And I'm just, it's exciting. Yeah. I'm always watching it, and it's like, oh my gosh, suspended animation last night was so good. you know, because the things that we changed and made better. So yeah, I'm always making things better if I can.
And so when you're recording these on a DVD or whatever kind of digital platform that you would use, do you sell these sometimes so that way when you have some volunteers come saying you can buy a copy of your performance tonight's show?
Yes, we do. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
We've been doing that for years. That's what pays for the cameras and some other things.
Right, right. What other tips have you got as far as money-making ideas for back-of-the-room sales?
Well, most of our money is made by the tickets, you know.
Well, magic kits. Rick's put together his own magic kit.
Right.
Did you go to India or someplace, or did you have that made here in the States? Or I know there are different places internationally that you can have these done. They kind of have like a standard kit, and they just put your picture on it, basically.
Right, no. But we did that for a while. We did that for about 5 years. And then Rick actually had his own mold made for the kit. We had our own box made so he could pick his
tricks
favorite
that I wanted,
tricks.
Right. Yeah. No, basically I put my own kit together. I couldn't find anybody that had a good enough quality kit, so I decided to just put my own together. And it was more expensive, but I give a kit out of money for every show, and that actually helps sell more kits because it's a little advertisement during the show. But I do it because I want kids that really want to get into magic to have something good.
Right, and he actually, we put together years ago a DVD. It's like a 4-hour DVD of Rick teaching all the tricks and then performing the tricks in the magic kit. And it's really quality entertainment, and the kids really enjoy that when they buy the kit.
Do you have different size kits? I know, like, Chris Angel has different size kits. I mean, whether it be a dozen tricks or 150 tricks or something, you have, or just one size kit.
It's just one kit. It's 100 tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. One kit.
Mm-hmm. And so other things, posters, pictures, photos, and other kinds of things you have in a magic shop you sell, I assume? Yeah.
We have lots of different posters over the years. It seems like every other year we have a new poster. So I think we probably have 6 or 7 posters that they can choose from, pictures that we can sign afterwards. Every show we come out after the show, we have a magic fireplace in the lobby that opens up. There's smoke that comes out, and we appear in the fireplace and then walk out and then sign autographs, and people come up and take pictures. So we have a little photo type thing where they take a picture and develop it and hand it out as a souvenir. They can sign a poster. We can magic wands, magic kits.
Yeah, that's always been pretty important, is meeting the people afterwards, talking to them, and It takes a little bit of extra work and time and energy, but it's been really rewarding, and people really appreciate that. Rick got that idea from Doug Henning when he saw him when he was a kid.
Yeah, Doug came out and met with me afterwards, and I was like nobody. And I was like, wow, that stuck in my mind. So I wanted to do that too for people that wanted to meet us, wanted to be available. So we created a little area of this cool fireplace that all opens up. I think I saw something like that in a movie, like Zorro, where his fireplace opened up, and I went, that's what I need. So
well, that certainly is a good idea. I think the meet and greets has got to be a standard type of a thing with most of the, at least magic shows, whether it's Matt King or whomever. It seems like a lot of the guys will, I mentioned Nathan Burton earlier and Mike Hammer and others, that they'll have like a step and repeat kind of a thing behind them, so this way they've got a place that you can take photos and sign autographs and, whatever, like if you just bought a poster or whatever, you can sign whatever there. So, yeah, it's got to be the standard kind of a thing, but I like what you're saying. It seems more like a homey kind of a thing. You kind of sit by the fireplace. You don't have a photo taken, and it's more like a family.
It's kind of a magical entrance. We have a low-lying fog machine back behind there that I rigged up, and it was pretty complicated to get it to work the way we wanted it to. But basically, it opens up, but it's all low-lying fog, like a fog wall that we're walking through. So it's kind of a magical entrance.
Ah, very cool.
And then you got all the low-lying fog in the whole lobby, which looks cool, and it's more magical.
Wow. Sounds like a great show from start to finish, as far as the experience, from the time that they come in the theater and all the things that are happening to the time that they leave. So, and during your season, is it pretty much sold out most of the time, or three quarters full, I would say, most of the time? Or what do you, how big's the house typically?
It really depends how many people are in town.
Yeah.
And, when we first started out, we were doing shows for 12, 20 people. Those days, thank goodness, are behind us. But, we still have slower shows. It just depends on how many hotel rooms are rented here, mm-hmm. and the time of year, the weather. There's just all sorts of different things that play into how many people are buying tickets.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense.
We're just happy to have an audience, so...
Right.
Get to do what we love to do.
Yeah, exactly. Getting to do what you love to do. Well, speaking of that, as we start to close out over here, the name of my podcast, of course, is called The Magic Word. And so I always like to hear from my guests what it is that's their magic word or words or phrase, or what is it that is your philosophy of life. And it may be something different for each of you, or you may have something combined that the two of you think that is your philosophy. So what would be your magic word?
I'm going to say gratitude today.
That's good.
Just being really grateful.
Yeah.
She stole your idea, right, Rick?
Well, no, I just feel so blessed that we are able to do what we love to do, and it doesn't really feel like work to me. So I don't mind working the long hours, preparing everything, because it's what I really love, and I'm very, very fortunate to be able to have this.
So his word is unwork.
Unwork. Yeah, it reminds me. I think Brad Ross had said something about love. Do what you love, and love what you do. It's always said. What they've always said is that if you enjoy and love what you do, that you'll never work a day in your life. So. Yeah, it sounds like you guys are loving the good life and enjoying that. So if people get a chance to come up to the Wisconsin Dells, what's the website, or how can they contact you or buy tickets and find more information?
RickWilcox.com, and all the information is there, and we'll send you some links for some cool photos and video and things like that as well. But it is a lot of fun. You got to get up here, Scott. And there's so much more that we haven't told you and you haven't seen. But, yeah, it's just – we'll have to do another one sometime, because there's so many other things I want to talk to you about.
Sure,
that we're,
cool.
We're so fortunate to have had Paul Daniels up here for a week. We have really, really good consultants. Don Wayne has come up several times, and we get to do some things that nobody else probably – maybe there's one or two other people doing it in the whole world. Mm-hmm. Right now, we just developed the floating ball routine, the Aikido floating ball. And I think, you know, Penn and Teller are doing it, and Luis de Matos is probably doing it. Paul Daniels was doing it for a while. But there's probably not a whole lot of people that have the opportunity to do that type of thing because they're just not in their own theater. And right. It's quite a setup.
I believe Tina Leonard has done that. I remember seeing her do that, I believe, like at the Magic Castle.
Okay, yeah. So it's just stuff like that and doing the dancing handkerchief and invisible man type routines. And we're just lucky to be able to
right.
have the opportunity to do those things that look so magical.
Well, there is a possibility, a slim possibility, by the way, that I might be able to get up there, if not later this summer, then next summer. And I'm saying that because my wife will be retiring soon, and so she'll have some time to travel with me. And so we're thinking about going to a few places, and this will be someplace on our bucket list to stop by.
Awesome.
So look forward to seeing you. Thank you both very much. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Rick Wilcox, for being my guest here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So we'll see you at 4F soon.
That's right. It's coming up, and by the time, I'll see you just in a couple of weeks over here. And so, for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Well, that was pretty cool and a lot of fun. So I want to thank my guests this week, Rick and Susan Wilcox, for visiting via Skype here on the Magic Word Podcast. And if you guys, again, happen to have an opportunity to be anywhere in the Midwest, the upper Midwest, please stop by Wisconsin Dells. As we discussed there at the end, I've not had a chance myself to get up there, but I do hope that sometime in the near future I might be able to go up and catch their show. It sounds fantastic. And I'm sure the Wisconsin Dells is a wonderful family location. In fact, I have been up in that area. I was up in Baraboo, Wisconsin, which I believe is where the home of the Circus Museum is. And I had actually gone up there to do some skiing one winter. Or two. Actually, I've been up there a couple times to do some snow skiing. So it's a nice little area. And again, if you're in the Chicago area, it's not that far of a drive than just to kind of go on up into Wisconsin and see the show. So again, go to rickwilcox.com for more ticket information. Well, this past week we had a contest that was with Sarah Skilton, who is the author of the new book that has just recently come out called Club Deception. And we've had quite a few people who have registered for the contest, and now it's time for us to make the announcement of the three people who have won a copy of Club Deception. And the winners are
Abe Carnow, Martin Vickerman, and Ridgely Hunt.
Congratulations, guys, and thank you to all those who entered the contest. And please continue to listen, because we do have these contests that run from time to time. And the next winner could be you. Well, I think that's pretty much a wrap for this week. And so we're going to have to get ready then to head out soon to Las Vegas to Magic Live, where we'll be posting our daily updates from the convention. So I know that this convention has been sold out for a long number of months. In fact, I believe it sold out shortly after the registrations were made available. It's always a popular convention, and I'm looking forward to attending. And I will, again, be posting these updates, so be sure and come back to the magicwordpodcast.com for those daily updates, and be sure to subscribe so this way that you don't miss one of the updates as it's sent directly to your smartphone or tablet device. And you can also listen to iTunes and Stitcher and Tuned In and all kinds of ways. You know how to do it, no problem whatsoever. And also be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at magicwordpod. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to always have gratitude. This is Scotty out.